Hi, I'm Sarah.
And I'm Megan.
We're two moms with 8 kids between us, from little to grown.
We're in different areas of the country and in different stages of life.
But we both know that motherhood's a lot easier when real moms share tips and encouragement.
And remind you that it's really all going to be okay.
We're not experts. We're parents who've been there.
We're not perfect. We're real. Welcome to the Mom Hour. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Mom Hour. I'm Megan Francis, and today I'm really excited to bring you an interview with my longtime friend and colleague, Chris Bordessa. Chris and I go way back. I knew her back in my magazine writing days, and we also blogged around the same time. In fact, Chris started her blog, Attainable Sustainable, in 2011, and it's still going strong today, 9 years later. She also just released a book by the same name, and it's a great reference point and a resource of skills that will help you and your family be more self-reliant and live more sustainably. Whether that means growing your own food and raising backyard chickens, or simply learning to stock your pantry with healthier food, or maybe even learn a few new cooking techniques. As Chris and I discussed in the episode, with more families home right now and our old routines disrupted, it's the perfect time to learn new skills and establish new habits. I've definitely become a lot more mindful about reducing food waste and keeping a pantry inventory over the last few months, and I've also started a much more ambitious garden this year than I usually would. I love Chris's approach because it's all about starting where you are and remembering that none of us are born with these skills. It's all about deciding what's important to you and then diving in, trying something new, and then building on skills as you go rather than trying to shoot for some unattainable, aspirational, perfect lifestyle right out of the gate. I hope you enjoyed listening to the interview with Chris and that it inspires you to try something new yourself. Hi, Chris. Thanks for being on the Mom Hour.
Hi, Megan. Good to talk with you.
Good to talk with you. Just at the beginning, I guess I should say we are recording this interview in May 2020. So we are, you know, in the United States a few months into the COVID-19 pandemic. And it occurred to me that we have such an interesting set of factors happening together right now. So first, I know for myself, I have realized how much I depend on outside resources for like everything from my food to what I do for entertainment. And then also how easily my life can be disrupted when those sources aren't available 24/7 anymore or at all. And then on the other hand, I just have more time on my hands and fewer distractions. So my guess, and this is just my theory, and you can tell me if I'm right or wrong, is that those two factors together have been leading to more and more people who have just decided to learn how to be more sustainable or try out a new household skill. So I'm just really curious, is that something you've seen? Have you seen increased interest in your blog or your new book or just interest in general in learning things that people didn't seem to be as interested in before?
Yeah, a little bit of all of the things you mentioned there, but definitely the one thing that I'm seeing people really, really dive into, two things actually. One is baking bread. We all have seen about the flour shortages. People are baking bread and looking for recipes and looking for easy recipes because they're, you know, they haven't maybe made bread before. So trying to figure out how that happens. And then gardening. People are thinking about, you know, I think a little bit of this, you know, break in the food system and how can they make sure that they've got some produce growing outside their back door.
Yeah, I can see that. And you're in your book and your blog, you talk about a lot of different sustainability or I guess self-reliance skills. So we're not just talking about food. You've got making things, making clothing covered. You've got basically farming from homesteading right down to backyard chickens. I mean, you really cover the gamut. Have you, besides baking bread, which I know we've seen so many people who want to start baking bread now, have you seen interest in even the bigger tasks, the one that would be a little more ambitious or a little more of a lifestyle change, really, more than just a skill?
Well, I don't know. To me, it's not big. But the one thing that I see people embracing as far as a lifestyle change all of a sudden, and they've, you know, honestly been kind of forced into it, is actually cooking at home. I think that we just don't realize how much people depend on that takeout meal. And you know, moms, busy moms trying to figure out how to feed their family and they're learning a little bit. You know, it takes a little bit of planning and we have to make sure that we've got food on the table and I'm not going to be able to just pop down to, you know, whatever our favorite restaurant is. So that's, I think, a little bit of a lifestyle change where people are having to embrace that idea. And you know what? It's kind of exhausting. I mean, even for me, somebody who cooks a lot of my own meals, boy, I really, really would just like to do some takeout.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. What's that like in Hawaii? I know it's a different experience all over the United States. So in Michigan, takeout's been a thing the whole time, but going out to eat is still not a thing. What's that like where you are?
Yeah, there are some. I live in a really small town here on Hawaii Island, and there are a few restaurants that are doing takeout, but a lot of them have just shut down just because people aren't coming out.
Yeah.
So they can legally, but you know, there's only a few that are actually doing much in the way of takeout at the moment.
Same here. We had at the beginning, there was a rush. I think everyone was trying, and then I think they started to realize that it just didn't make sense. Like it wasn't cost effective, and they couldn't pay enough people. And yeah, so it's been hard here too.
Yeah.
So let's give some background about you. And I know you're Attainable Sustainable blog. And I mentioned in the intro that you and I have known each other for a long time. And I remember very clearly, actually, a group we were in, I think you were running names by us and we were like voting on the names. If I recall correctly, I could be wrong about that.
But that sounds about right.
Yeah. So you went with this Attainable Sustainables, which is such a great name. Mm-hmm. But give some background about you, like, how did your personal interest in living more simply and sustainably evolve? And then how did that lead to you writing about it?
Oh, gosh. My background, I was raised in a farming family. So I have a little bit of background as far as that goes. You know, my dad was an apple farmer. We always had a vegetable garden. So, you know, this is not new to me. My mom canned the fruits and vegetables from the garden and from the farm. That's not new to me. And I've got that background. So I think that it's a little bit easier for me to tackle some of this stuff than people who have never even seen it happening. But the bigger interest as I, you know, moved further into adulthood and becoming a parent and raising kids is that none of the farming that I grew up with was done in any kind of non-toxic manner.
Okay.
So, you know, I started to shift as far as that goes trying to have access to healthier food in particular, because I have a son, my youngest son, when he was quite small, was having behavioral issues. And it took us, a lot of trial and error to figure out that the thing that was bothering him was food coloring. Mm. And, you know, even eating some of the things that, you know, were supposedly healthy, the yogurts and such, we figured out that they had the food coloring in there, and that was really giving him a problem as far as his behavior. So, you know, that kind of rolled into, let's check the ingredients on this thing. And even though I had this background where I was eating home canned applesauce and, you know, canning my own tomatoes, we still were relying on some of those foods, and those foods were impacting him. So it was kind of this rolling shift that we made, and he, you know, his behavior issues definitely were one of the things that kicked us into trying to eat a little bit more clean. And in eating more cleanly, what we discovered is, you know, we were eventually generating less trash, we were using less plastic, and you know, that obviously has become a concern as time has passed too. So it just kind of snowballed, I guess.
Yeah. Okay. So you've got, your son that kind of inspired this change. How old is he now?
He will be 25.
Oh my goodness. Okay.
I know.
Oh, time has flown.
Tell me.
Time has flown. Yeah. Okay. Well, we're going to take a quick break. And when we get back, I want to talk more about some of the skills in your book and on your blog, and just kind of this idea that these are things people have been doing, for centuries. These are skills that we've lost so quickly and almost are more intimidating than they need to be, I think, sometimes. So we're going to take a quick break. And when we get back, we will jump into that. Sarah, you know that one of my favorite things about the summer is lounging at the beach or pool with a tasty adult beverage. But as we've talked about on the show before, we don't love the whole mommy needs wine mentality that's so, you know, ubiquitous. Mm-hmm. And then add in so many opportunities for summer day drinking, and it's easy to overdo it.
Right. Yeah. If I have like one beer at lunchtime, which can sound kind of nice, I am basically in nap vacation mode until the end of the day, which does not work most days.
Right. So that's why I was so excited to hear from our new sponsor, Groovy. That's Gruvi. Groovy is a new brand of craft alcohol-free beers and wines. They've got a selection of alcohol-free craft beers that will get even serious beer lovers excited, including a sour, a stout, an IPA, and a lager. And then what got me most excited, they have an alcohol-free Prosecco that's just 50 calories. So my sister is a serious beer fan, but doesn't drink a lot. And she was excited to be able to sip craft beers while visiting last week without getting a buzz. And I've been enjoying the Prosecco all kinds of ways. The other day, I took the kids to the beach and I had an alcohol-free mimosa with Groovy Prosecco. It tasted great. And when I got home, I had enough energy to make dinner and actually enough brain power to get some work done.
Yeah, there are definitely times when you want the flavor of a craft beverage, but not the alcohol. And I'm looking forward to having the option of an alcohol-free beer this summer for those days when I want the taste of craft beer, but not the effects of alcohol. If you're curious about Groovy, they've got a great deal for you. Just use the code MOMHOUR for 15% off your order. Go to getgroovy.com. Again, that's G-R-U-V-I. And use the code MOMHOUR for 15% off your order.
We are welcoming back our longtime partner, Shoot Along, today. Sarah, our listeners love this program.
Yes, they do. Shoot Along is an online photography course for moms who want to use their DSLR camera to take beautiful photos of their kids. I got my first DSLR back in 2012, and it was so intimidating learning to take photos in manual mode, but once I did, it was incredibly rewarding. We all love our smartphone photos, but there's really nothing like having that control over your settings to be able to take great photos in any light or situation.
Right now, Shoot Along is offering two different online courses that you do completely on your own time, at your own pace, no deadlines. Camera Express gives you 10 nuts and bolts lessons to get you comfortable with your DSLR camera, and to start moving away from that auto setting, which I know is so tempting for all of us, right? Mm-hmm. And then Editing Express consists of 52 how-to videos showing how to edit and improve your images using Photoshop Elements.
Okay, so if I were you all, I would get both of those courses together. You can get them both for a total of $39.99. Because for me, in my photography learning, taking great pictures and knowing how to edit are so intertwined. They really work together. So I love that you can get those two courses as a bundle. And that's a really good deal. And what a fun way to challenge yourself this summer.
Yeah. So head to shootalong.com/themomhour to get Camera Express and Editing Express bundled together for just $39.99. Again, that's shootalong.com/themomhour and scroll down to choose Full Express to get that great deal. Check it out. Okay, so Chris, I think it's so interesting that you grew up in a farming family. You talked about your mom canning. Going back further, I think these are skills like gardening and canning and knitting and, you know, fixing your own clothing. We talk about it all the time. It's become kind of a cliche that those are skills people had, just normal people. Everybody had them up until pretty recently. But now it's like we're not only have we forgotten how to do it, but we've sometimes lost the confidence to try, I think. And why do you think that is? Are we just afraid we're going to screw it up?
Well, I suppose there's that.
Yeah.
I think it happened very slowly and yet very quickly. I mean, it's really been the past several generations, but I think it's, you know, going back to the idea of home cooking, several generations ago, grandma wouldn't have considered going out. You know, you didn't go buy your food elsewhere, right? You made your food at home, and it has just slowly become such a casual part of our existence to go, you know, grab a rotisserie chicken or whatever, that we're not doing that anymore. So all of a sudden we have a generation or a couple generations of these children who were raised in a family that didn't cook. Mm. I mean, I actually have people, contact me all the time and say, I just never learned how to cook, which is unfathomable to me because we did cook at home. And it's, you know, it's not that they're lazy. It's not that they just can't do this or that they might not do it right. They just simply don't know where to start. Mm-hmm. Same thing goes with any kind of crafting. You know, everybody's online now. So that's, you know, spare time. You're maybe online and not doing any kind of handcrafting or making of things. And, you know, then as far as those products go, too, they're pretty readily available.
Yeah.
Commercially to buy at retail. So, you know, if I can go buy a quilt at the store for $50, why would I spend the time making one?
Yeah. And I think also the fact that we are online, and this is a pretty recent change, maybe in the last 10 years or so, we're seeing sort of these very aspirational, perfect versions of things that, like, our first attempts aren't going to look like that, right? You know, like, the first time you try to, you know, cut up a chicken, like, it's not going to look perfect, but the only way to learn how to do it is to do it.
is just to dive in. And it's funny that you say that, because this book is beautiful.
Mm, it really is.
It's a beautiful book. And if you compare that, and I'm straight up here, if you compare this book and how beautiful it looks to my house, it's not happening. You know, I mean, I'm real life here. So I that was one of the things when I first got a look at the pages of this book, I thought, boy, I hope this doesn't, I don't know, deter people from trying to dive in because it does look so beautiful. And I had people say, what, you know, did you want them to include ugly pictures? And, you know, no, you don't, but at the same time, I don't want people to think that they're not going to get it right that first time and not try to tackle it, you know?
Right.
So, truthfully, the picture that you see in the book is, you know, that's the aspirational thing maybe. And it shows you, you know, what can happen, what it can look like, but the process is messy.
It is. But you know, what's funny about that is that even if the quilt comes out a little janky, or the bread is lumpy or whatever, like it cannot look Instagram worthy, but still taste great or keep your family warm. So there's like value in those early attempts, and actually might be something you look back later and love the fact that you have something you made that was a little more rough and that you, and your skills grew over time.
100%. Yeah. It's totally a process. My husband actually, with all of this being at home, has started tackling bread baking. And, you know, he started with a no need bread recipe. And, you know, the first couple attempts, he was, you know, fumbling, and, oh, he's not sure about it. It looks a little bit wet and it's never going to rise and this whole thing. And over the course of the past couple of months, he just, you know, he knows what day he's going to bake his bread. He knows how to do it. He rolls it together. It sits in there and he sits overnight. And in the morning he bakes it and he's got bread. And so, you know, there was that learning curve. It was interesting to watch him learning and figuring out how to do this. And, you know, the initial struggles and frustration that he had, to the point where now he just, you know, proudly pulls out a loaf of bread in the morning.
Well, and even you, I mean, you've been writing about this stuff forever. You've been living it for a long time. But you moved from one climate to another. I'm not sure how long you've been in Hawaii now, but I'm sure you had to relearn some things when you made that move.
Oh my gosh, I still am. And that's what, you know, I tell people, I am learning right alongside the rest of you. This is, you know, I don't know everything.
Right.
You know, I mean, I'm lucky enough to have written this book, but I truly just don't know everything. And yeah, when we moved here, I mean, the big joke is people on the continent can mostly grow zucchini very easily, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody jokes about, you know, gosh, your neighbor's got zucchini, go running. I can't grow zucchini here.
Oh my gosh, that is interesting.
Right? I cannot grow zucchini here. There are too many pests that attack it, and we have a problem with powdery mildew. So these are things that I've had to finally figure out. Okay, the reason I used to grow zucchini is because it was easy. You know, it was a no-brainer in the garden. You planted a couple of plants, you had zucchini all summer long. It's no longer easy.
Right.
So, you know, I don't love zucchini that much that I'm just, you know, desperately trying to grow it. It's no longer easy. So I've given up on that. And you know, I have shifted into things that do grow better here. And, you know, I'm changing a little bit. You know, I don't have the zucchini for my recipe that I normally would have. So, we do have growers here that I can get that from. They're growing in greenhouses and, you know, under certain conditions. So definitely a learning curve.
Well, and I think there's something to that about, like, are you in this because by in this, I mean, anything from cooking or gardening to anything else you do, because you just want to feed your family and you want to make it as simple as you can, or for the challenge of it. And it reminds me of an article that I actually wrote for a site a while back about how to grow an avocado tree if you live in a northern climate. And basically, I don't exactly remember how you do it, but like the chances of it actually bearing fruit are very slim, and it takes several seasons before you know. And I remember thinking, like, who would do this? But I guess if you're in for the challenge, that's one thing. Just like if you want to create this really, you know, complicated recipe, that's a different thing than putting food on the family for your, or on the table for your family at night. Two different goals, right?
I think so. You know, and I think that there is something fun about taking a tree or a plant that wouldn't normally grow in your region and trying to get it to grow there.
Yeah.
That to me is a challenge, but as far as getting out there and making it, you know, something that's really going to produce for your family in order to put food on the table, as you say, you know, you really need to step back and think about what grows well in the region that you're in. And that's going to differ. You talk about the avocados. Avocados, I can't throw avocado pits in my compost because they will grow.
Yeah, I was going to say, I bet you have no problems there, right?
You know, I have to be careful about that. So, you know, that's what does grow well here. So it's just shifting. And I always say that it's super important when people are starting to garden to get out there. Go talk to your neighbor and find out what grows really well for them. Mm. Because yeah. That's going to give you a, you know, give you a clue as to what will grow well for you in your garden.
I love it. So let's talk about the book. Like you said, it's gorgeous. It is a beautiful mm-hmm. book. It's really mm-hmm. easy. Like, I love the way it's laid out. It's very easy to navigate and follow along with. So it just came out in April, and I feel like that timing was like accidentally. I'm assuming that was accidentally perfect timing, and that you didn't speed up.
I had nothing to do with this COVID
right.
thing.
Yeah. Yeah, we know now where it came from. The conspiracy right, theorists right? can put a big target on you. But tell us a little bit about how the book is laid out and the different sections, and then some of your favorite skills projects that the readers will find in each chapter.
Okay, the book is, as you say, it's beautiful. It's divided into 6 sections, 3 indoor and 3 outdoor overarching categories. Okay. And they're color-coded. Everybody has said, oh my gosh, I love that it's color-coded. So I know exactly where I'm going. And yeah, it's got kind of a little rainbow on the edges when you look at it. And those categories are eat, you know, which encompasses a lot of different cooking skills, not necessarily meals so much as pantry staples and canning and preserving and such. And we get into clean and make. Which encompasses, you know, a little bit of handcraft, kind of soul feeding projects, and then non-toxic cleaners, non-toxic skincare. And then, of course, we go into outside where we talk about grow, farm, and trek, which is essentially, you know, people get outside, grow some food. And you know, when we talk about farming, it's really an overview of the possibilities for urban farming. We're not talking about, you know, 40 acres and a cow. It's you know, can you add chickens to your small place? Can you, you know, raise pheasants? And I mean, I actually know people who raise pheasants in their home because they're a small bird and they can gather the eggs there. So it's really a very broad introduction to a lot of different topics that people can tackle. Mm. As far as my favorites, you know, I have to say that the garden section is one. I mean, gardening is my thing. That's my break. A lot of people see it as chores, but for me, it's if I can get outside and get my hands in the dirt. That's the breaking point. And then in the eat section, I have a section in there that is about creating a DIY pantry. And essentially, that's a look at creating the things that we tend to buy at the store, maybe that are so habitual that we don't even realize. They're things like salad dressings and mayonnaise and mustard. So instead of buying those bottles that are, you know, ultimately going to end up in the trash and that may have kind of questionable ingredients, you can make that at home. And it's not hard.
And I agree, the book does cover a wide gamut or a range of I guess levels or like levels of commitment. Like you could jump in and be like, I want to learn about this, and then do deep dives on like everything in the book. Or you could just say, you know, it'd be a good idea to clean up my pantry a little bit and get, and get some staples and maybe learn how to grow tomatoes. Like I think you could really take it as far as you want, but you could also start as small as you want and just keep going back to it and adding as you go.
Adding different skills.
Yeah. Yes.
I had a friend of mine said, you know, I sat down and read your book cover to cover and I thought, wow, yeah. Really? That's quite a commitment because for me, I'm a flipper, you know, so I'm going to flip and go, oh, this project looks like something I feel like tackling right now. And some of these are simple projects. They're introductory projects, if you will. There's a couple of introductory recipes for quick breads. So maybe somebody isn't ready to tackle yeast bread yet, but they can learn how to make a quick bread loaf. And you know, there are a few recipes for quick breads. There's a few recipes for yeast breads, but somebody who has a chance to try these or try planting a couple of Swiss chard seeds and sees that they are, you know, that that worked and they're harvesting food, then you can dig in deeper, right? Mm-hmm. There's just so much information out there for all of these different things. But it's really, to me, it's a chance for people to try on some of these different projects and see what really captures their interest.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like a prescriptive blueprint for the way you should live your life. It is a reference tool. And so you can use it however works for you. And I thought it was really inspiring. A lot of our listeners have small children. So I'm curious if there are any of the projects in the book that you think would lend themselves particularly well to doing with little kids, or with little kids at your elbow, as is the as is the reality for so many moms.
Right. Well, definitely take your kids out and plant some seeds. Gardening is such, to me, that is, it's such a learning opportunity for the kids. You may have a couple of accidents with kids, you know, pulling the wrong plant, thinking it's a weed. My family still jokes about the time my son got hold of my pruners and just decimated one of my brand new trees that I had just planted. Poor kid. I think he's still ruined from it. But, you know, yeah, get them out in the garden. That is something that, you know, even if you've only got an apartment balcony, you can grow some small containers. You can do sprouting with them so that that's even just on your kitchen counter and they're seeing that food production. You know, as far as in the kitchen, pickling is something that I think that they could help with. That's, you know, you don't necessarily have to can pickles. You can do refrigerator pickles. So let them help with, you know, slicing cucumbers to make refrigerator pickles. Yeah. Fermentation is another one that, I think kids can help with that. I mean, it's cooking, right? They're going to be cooking. They can be helping pack the jars and such. But the interesting thing about fermentation is when it's starting to get active, they can actually watch and see the bubbling happening for a lot of these. So,
it's quicker, right? It's not like waiting for a really long time to get a result.
You know, you're probably talking 5 to 7 days to a completed project. So, you know, they're chopping and helping you pack the jars on one day, and then you can, it sits out on the counter and you can watch. And so, you know, all these parents who are all of a sudden doing school at home, that's science.
Right.
Sit down and, you know, let them watch this happen. So, you know, I think that's another fun one.
I love that. Speaking of family life and kids, I know yours are older. And so they were kind of growing up in with these changes in a different, slightly different generation, I guess. But did they ever complain or push back because you weren't buying certain products or going out to eat as much as other families or whatever the changes were? Maybe your household looked a little different from others. Just curious if your kids were on board or if you had to kind of say, hey, this is how we do things.
Oh, gosh. I think it was just, I mean, this was just what we did.
Yeah.
I did as my boys got older, I had to really point out to them that, you know, not every household has a mom that's cooking meals every night. Mm. This is, you know, so that they did understand that and it probably is not the norm.
Right.
That you know, other families are out there doing a little bit more takeout stuff or more convenient things. I had the good fortune of being able to be home with my kids, though. So that gave me the opportunity to do more home cooking. I've always worked from home, so I could throw a meal in the slow cooker and have it ready at the end of the night. But yeah, I think it was just, they knew that that's how we lived.
Right.
I don't think it was anything ever, you know, really strange. I did have the, you know, and back to that, the one kid with the color problem, he was a candy hound and he always wanted candy. And, you know, we just constantly had to tell him, you know, you can't handle it.
Right.
So, you know, we were always trying to come up with a different,
like an alternative
solution so that,
so
that he could have something that felt like a treat to him without having those. You know, he always wanted those sour things.
Oh, yes. The sour things boys want. Yes. The ones that hurt to eat. Yeah.
That was what he wanted. And we always had to say, yeah, it's not happening. So, you know, there was that. There were some small scale battles, I think.
Right.
But, you know, nothing that was too difficult for us to manage.
Well, and I think anytime there's anytime there are a parenting decisions that you have to make, when you can come into it with confidence and just and kind of present it really matter of factly, like, this is how we do things, kids, they get that. I know for myself, we talk about this on the Mom Hour a lot. Sometimes you can kind of just blame it on the out there, the rules, like, that's not the house. Like, this isn't the way we do things in this house. And then the kids are like, oh, okay. And so it's not personal.
So, right. Yeah. It's not, that's just my thing. It's the house has rules.
Exactly. All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break again and we will be right back. Sarah, you know that I've been a big Fabletics fan for years. I finally paused my membership about a year ago because I had sort of like an obsession with buying their stuff and my drawers were a bit overly stocked with leggings and tanks. But I recently restarted my membership because, hey, with all the staying at home, I need more athleisure wear. And I was thrilled to see how many new styles they've introduced recently, including tons of leggings and even shorts with those nice deep pockets for stashing my phone and like doggy cleanup bags when I go for walks.
Yeah, I am jealous of your pocketed leggings, and I have loved hearing you rave about Fabletics for the last couple of years, so I'm eager to try this out.
Yeah, I just find that when I have cute, comfortable activewear, I'm so much more likely to actually just go for that walk or do the yoga instead of sitting around thinking about it and like letting the clothing get in the way. And most of these pieces are really versatile too, so you could pair a dressier top with a leggings or toss on a pair of cute shoes and a cardigan and really feel like you're, I don't know, restaurant ready. I know we don't do that anymore, but eventually, right?
Someday. Well, get this, Megan. All leggings are 2 for $24 when you become a Fabletics VIP member. I guess you already know that, but that blew my mind. 2 for $24. Amazing. So head to themomhour.com/fab to sign up and you'll get that great deal of 2 pairs of leggings for $24. Again, it's themomhour.com/fab to get started with a VIP Fabletics membership. Okay, everyone, Father's Day is right around the corner, and I have a great gift idea for you. Our partner, Minted.com, does an amazing job with custom art gifts. Like, you can have a photo of a special building or a city scene turned into a framed sketch. You can have silhouette pieces created from your kids' profiles. You can have a meaningful quote framed in beautiful lettering. Everything that Minted artists come up with is so cool looking.
Yes, I have loved Minted for years, but I used to think of them mostly as higher-end stationery and holiday cards. I've been looking at their site and realizing how much they've expanded to framed art, fabric and textiles, and all kinds of great stuff.
So yeah, Minted is actually a design marketplace. That means they source creative content from a global community of independent artists and then sell the best content in the form of art, home decor, and stationery directly to consumers. So they basically found a way to use technology to allow us to discover great creative talent while at the same time artists get to learn and gain exposure and build their businesses.
Use the promo code 4DAD when you check out at Minted.com and you'll get 15% off all gifts this Father's Day. That's 4DAD at Minted.com. Check it out. So Chris, I want to circle back to the why behind some of the changes, not just the changes that you made, but that other people might consider making. Because right now I get the feeling that we're living in this world. And again, we're still, you know, a few months into this pandemic and things are still shaking out as far as how long it's going to last. And so it would be easy to look at this and say, well, this is a fun little diversion for now, but this isn't going to last forever. And, you know, things are just going to go back to normal. So I guess the question I'm getting at, besides the satisfaction of learning how to do this or just riding us out through this kind of disruptive time, why are these things people would want to bother learning how to do if they don't actually have to?
Right. I see all of the changes that have happened just in the past couple of months. And I just keep thinking, I hope some of this sticks. Mm. You know, the nurseries and garden centers have been sold out of seeds and all of, you know, because so many people are all of a sudden switching into doing some gardening. And, you know, as far as that goes, we have a real problem with the food system. And I think that's become very evident that we're counting on just a few people to create the food for us. So I hope that's something that is now kind of at the forefront of people's awareness, that they will begin to realize that maybe we should think about how to bring some of this food production closer to home, whether that's in your backyard or participating in a CSA once a week delivery box of vegetables to support your local farmers. But this dependence that we have on huge agriculture, you know, it's got problems.
Yeah.
So So yeah, I hope as far as that goes, that that's one change that, that we can stick with. You know, the other thing is of course with our food, we can skip some of the ingredients that we've been eating that maybe aren't necessarily great for us by cooking at home, by using more fresh vegetables and locally produced foods. And then, you know, my thing is the waste. Mm. So much of the food that we get at the supermarket is packaged in plastic that then goes in the trash that fills our landfills. So, you know, that's a big one for me. That's kind of a big why. If we can figure out how to skip some of those things. I mean, just as a for instance, and if you go to the, or at least at my supermarket, if you go to the supermarket in the produce section, there's a product, and I don't remember the name of the product, but it's a ready-to-make dish of potatoes. And essentially, it is a plastic tray that's microwavable.
Yep.
With small potatoes in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, this is where we get into. People never learned how to cook, so they don't know that this microwavable plastic packaged potato can easily be replaced by just buying a plain potato
yes.
and cooking it in the right. microwave or in the oven.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, obviously people are depending on these and I'm not sure why. I really feel like it just must be the idea of the convenience because people are busy or they didn't know. And,
yeah.
and you know, it's just not hard to bake a potato. So we've been, I do think that we've been convinced that we need these things by the corporate food system. And, you know, once we go a generation in or two generations in, that's all we know.
Yeah.
That's all we know. One of the big ones people always just totally flip out about is mustard. And, you know, not that somebody's going through a jar of mustard a week. But you can make your own mustard at home and it is the easiest thing in the world. And I've had people try my recipe. It is actually on my website too, for people who don't have the book. You can make mustard at home. It's, you know, 5 minutes. It doesn't take long at all. You do have to let it sit for a couple of days, but you can replace then that bottle that you're making. So it's probably not something that too many people have said, gee, I need to replace my mustard.
Right.
But, you know, if you're starting to become concerned about the plastic that you're bringing home, it's an easy one. It's, yeah. you know, that's a super easy one to tackle.
Yeah. And I think it's a matter of probably figuring out in your family the things that you use the most, maybe, and starting there.
Of course.
Potato thing is so funny. I lived in a really tiny house before the house I currently live in for a couple of years, and there was no room for a microwave. And the kids were like mad about it that we didn't have a microwave. And I don't have anything against microwaves, but I said I'm not going to give up precious, precious counter space for a microwave right now. So we're just going to have to figure this out. And what I found interesting was that I already wasn't really relying on that kind of food anyway, but it just hammered home how unnecessary it is to ever buy anything like plastic wrapped in a little clamshell container or whatever that's only packaged that way for the ease of sticking it in the microwave. Like that's really why it's packaged that way. And when you don't have one, there's no point ever buying, like literally ever buying anything like that there, because it's so much more work than to like remove it from the container and stick it in the pan and heat it up. And it kind of just reminded me of how unnecessary and not even particularly more convenient a lot of those foods are. It's a mindset shift. And it's also trusting that you can figure out how to slice a potato really thin or like read a recipe and cook it in the oven or however you're going to do it. So it's like, I think until people are kind of forced out of things, sometimes it doesn't occur to them. But then when you right. change it, you're like, oh, that was easy. I can do that. And then you can do on the next thing.
Right. That's actually a really good point. I haven't had a microwave in years and years and years, but that's a good point that a lot of the stuff is meant specifically for that microwave. So you're not going to maybe notice it.
Right. Exactly.
All of a sudden find yourself like you did.
Yeah. And I would say that the kids would be like, well, how are we supposed to heat up leftovers? And I said, well, we have this thing. It's called a stove.
Right. My sister, I mean, this was years and years ago. My sister came to visit and she was just horrified. How do I heat up my baby's bottles?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, you'll figure it out.
Boil some water and put the bottle in the water. I mean, how did our grandmas do it?
That's right. Yeah.
When you were talking about the food system, I think it's really interesting when this was all starting. And there were a lot of articles kind of reassuring everyone, like the supply chain is fine. Like, don't worry about it. And I remember having some skepticism, like, why would I believe that? Obviously the toilet paper supply chain didn't quite work for a while. The sanitizing wipes still isn't working. And I think you're so right that it's not that the food's not there. It's that if there's a problem with the packaging plant, the whole thing shuts down. And here again, probably around early to mid May, 2020, suddenly meat was really hard. Like certain cuts of meat were really hard to find and the prices were just ridiculous. And like right down the street, there are meat markets that are, these are all this high quality grass-fed beef, things like that, raised by local farmers. And suddenly those prices are starting to look kind of appealing because before they weren't quite competitive enough, but now they're better and you know you're getting a better product and you can actually find what you're looking for. So that I think is a change that I'm hoping, just like you, that people are going to say, I have other options for filling my fridge. And it doesn't have to be this major supermarket just because I've always done my shopping there.
It's so much habit breaking, you know, from whatever it is that you're putting in your cart at the supermarket or where you're shopping. It's just, you know, we're people of routine. And it feels, I mean, obviously the past couple of months we've had a chance to see what it feels like to have our routines interrupted. But, you know, I hope that little bit of interruption makes people think.
Yeah.
And like you say, start looking at some of these smaller businesses and smaller food producers who can help get food on the table.
I actually read an article not too long ago saying that one of the side effects that may happen, and I haven't seen it personally, but perhaps it will, is that if there's continues to be disruption in meat, say meat packing plants or something, we might have to get used to different cuts of meat. And I think that would even be an interesting place to start. Like, what if suddenly you couldn't get chicken breasts anymore? All you could get was a whole chicken, or you couldn't get you couldn't get ground beef. All you can get is like a huge haunch. So like, I just think that's going to kind of jar, even if people keep shopping at the same places, having to deal with different meat realities or different vegetable realities or whatever might happen could also maybe spark some changes and some interest.
It's interesting. I was talking to a friend of mine yesterday and she was saying that she had been to the supermarket and she went with a very short list just to go get the few things that she needed. But she said they were out of several of them. So she was in the supermarket with the mask on. And I don't know about you, but I have a real hard time thinking with that mask on.
Me too. Like I want to get in and get out. Yep.
And she said, so here I was faced with trying to think, they don't have this, so what can I get that would also work in this recipe that I'm making? How could I, how can I switch it up? So I think you're right. I think it's definitely going to be a matter of people are going to have to get a little bit more creative if what they're used to getting is not readily available.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I know some people are listening and thinking, okay, so I can see myself maybe learning how to cook a home cooked meal because I already had to, or bake bread, but I'm not interested in learning how to butcher a chicken. So let's unpack that a little bit just as a way to kind of tie this all up. Like, we don't have to do it all to make an impact. And I think that's something that could be really hard on us, especially the perfectionists among us, or those of us who really just want to tackle things like do it, you know, do it all, take it all the way. If somebody really wanted to start small with just one thing, like what advice do you have for that person who maybe just wants to dip in a toe?
Well, you know, I have to tell you that one of the real kickers that got me going with this website and starting this in the first place was a conversation I had with a friend of mine many years ago. And we were trying to figure out what is one thing, if we could tackle one thing a day to start working ourselves towards being, you know, a little more green, a little more self-reliant, doing more of our own things. So I am all about small steps. Mm. People are not going to flip a switch tomorrow and all of a sudden, you know, be living this more self-reliant lifestyle. It's noticing, like I say, noticing your habits, the things that you bring habitually that you could maybe change or make at home yourself. As far as the projects or what people can tackle, I think it depends so much on individuals. What do they like? What thing must you have at the supermarket that you're going to be bummed out if you can't get? Mm. And can you figure out how to make that at home? Right. So starting there, the things that you use regularly, is there a way to make that a greener choice? It's really paying attention. To be able to say there's one thing people should start with, I think that's, it's so going to depend. Soap making is one that I've only just recently tackled in the last several years. It took me forever to start doing that because the idea of soap making, just the idea of it, was so daunting.
Yes.
And, so it's something, why is it so hard that when there's something that we don't know how to do, we put it off and put it off and put it off?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
That's so funny because I have been wanting to make soap since, I don't know, for like 20 years. And when I really wanted to learn how to do it, I had little kids. And I use that as the excuse. Like, well, I don't want to have lye in the house. I don't want to be messing with that when I have little kids. One day I looked around, I'm like, okay, I have no excuse anymore. Like, my kids are not little anymore. No babies are going to be like, putting their hands into stuff. So, but I built it up in my head.
Right. So have you tried it?
No, not yet. Maybe I will now.
Not yet. Okay. Okay. But that's exactly right. You've just worried about it for so long because the same thing. I was concerned, well, there's lye. That sounds really, like it might be difficult or dangerous or whatever. Mm. And I finally just, it's probably been 4 years ago or so that I started. I finally was like, okay, I have to do this. And I started doing it and oh my gosh, it is the easiest thing in the world. If you can make soap, if you can make cake and mix up cookie batter or whatever, it's all it is just combining ingredients.
Yeah.
It's just that, you have to be a little careful not to spill them, but it's so easy.
I love that. That's a great example. And I think that's one of those things that most people, it just wouldn't occur to us that we have an option besides running to the grocery or, to the grocery store or the pharmacy and picking up. Because you can make laundry detergent. There's a lot of things you can make mm-hmm. out of. It's not just bars of soap. So if your family isn't the bar of soap type, and mine isn't, it's still a skill worth looking into.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course. And making your own, you can customize it. You can choose your fragrance and make it your own. But it also is less expensive. When you make one batch of soap, you're not making a single bar. You're making enough bars to last your family for months, probably. Right. So it's makes a big batch. But yeah, it's breaking habits. It's deciding that you're ready to learn a new skill and getting kind of beyond that hesitancy. I met with a friend of mine yesterday who has never grown a garden before. And she's really struggling. She keeps planting seeds and they're not coming up or she doesn't know if it's the soil and she's just, she really wants to have a garden. And I talked with her yesterday and she said to me, I thought it would be cheating if I bought seedlings.
Yeah.
And I said, no, it's not cheating if you bought seedlings. That's just, that's just another way to start your garden. So for goodness sake, don't let your fears and your concerns and your expectations prevent you from trying something new. I mean, figure out a way. Yes, go buy seedlings. Get right. your garden started.
Yeah. And you can learn some things that then later maybe you'd say, okay, I'm going to save the money and just start from seed. But if for whatever reason, it's funny, this is the first year I've ever started any kind of garden from seed because I usually I'm so busy in May, I miss basically the opportunity to start the seeds. Mm-hmm. And this year I was stuck. I wasn't traveling. I wasn't doing any of those things. But if I hadn't started several gardens from seedlings before, I never would have been able to jump in. That was way too big of a leap for me. So sometimes you gotta let the perfect become the enemy of the getting it did. Right?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So yeah, I gave her permission to go get seedlings and so she was gonna see if she could go that way. But yes, take the shortcut. If you're not ready to start cutting old clothes into squares to make a hand-pieced quilt, maybe just start with something easier. Start with something that is fabric, ready-made fabric. It's easier to cut into squares than, tackling doing it from clothing.
Yeah.
There's just all kinds of different ways that, you can kind of start get yourself started. And then, as you say, dig in and, you know, take it a little level deeper.
Yeah. I love it. Well, thank you so much, Chris. Again, the blog and the book are Attainable Sustainable. Remind me of the URL of your blog in case someone wants to check it out.
It's attainablesustainable.net.
Okay. I thought so, but I wanted to make sure. And the book is available basically everywhere right now. I know it's on Amazon and in, you know, regular bookstores.
Yep, it's available.
Go to those.
At all of the online booksellers. I've been sending people to bookshop.org, which supports indie booksellers.
Okay.
And yeah, if, you know, if you've got a bookstore that is open in your area, it should be on the shelves. But, you know, we're definitely doing a lot of online stuff right now.
Well, and a lot of the stores around here, at least that aren't open, are still allowing you to call in orders and do curbside. So they should have no trouble getting it, even if it's not on their shelf right now because no one's going into the store. They should be able to get it and deliver it to you that way. So, bookshop.org, that's a great reference to keep in mind. So love that.
Yeah, I like that.
Well, thank you, Chris. This has been great. And I hope you do really well with the book and enjoy your Hawaiian summer coming up.
Thank you. So good talking with you, Megan.
Good to talk with you, too. Bye.